Andrews lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome to your preview edition of the, well, you know what, we're going to be honest, it's the Marquette basketball game, but with Richmond's boys, 13.5-point underdogs, and trust me, we'll cover the hell out of that game if they win it, but this is your Montana State football preview. I mean, we are talking about the opportunity to head to Frisco, Texas, for what I believe would be the third straight year and eighth out of nine, which is exactly as insane as that sounds. It's exactly as insane as that sounds, considering that everybody else has just as many scholarships as the Bison. Let's hit the news. If you guys had a chance to check out the Wednesday pod, you noticed that the podcast didn't start with the music. It started with this, you know, low, smooth voice instead, explaining that we knew what happened with Felix Anadike, but Trevor and I did the pod before that was kind of information we were comfortable sharing. So very brief recap, guys. Felix Anadike was a high-end kid, high-level kid in this class, had interest from all over the country, and consistently was posting his highlights on his Twitter page, taking visits, taking officials, taking unofficials all over the country. Finally, North Dakota State staff just said, look, commitment is a two-way street. We're committed to you. You're committed to us. It doesn't seem like you're that committed to us. So about 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks prior to signing day, the NDSU staff basically said, we're not holding a spot for you anymore. We're going to go and look for somebody in your spot because it seems like you're going to, you know, you're not committed to what we're doing. So that ultimately is what happened, is Anadike. 2 weeks prior to signing day, everybody knew he wasn't going to be a Bison. So, and it might sound like I'm defending Kleiman. I promise you I'm not. Chris Kleiman and Kansas State did not come the day before signing day and snap up Felix Anadike. That kid was not going to be a Bison. So that's the deal. Anyway, moving on. Lance and Raidens were named ADA All-Americans. What ADA All-Americans mean is first team. So the athletic directors selected Lance as the top quarterback in the country and selected Dylan Raidens then as the top left tackle, or probably more than likely just one of the top two tackles in the country. North Dakota State also fortunate enough to get eight different Bison into the Hero Sports FCS All-America team. Jabril Cox was on the first team. Zach Johnson was on the first team. So was Trey Lance, Dylan Raidens, and Derek Tuska. Cordell Volson and James Hendricks made the second team. And baby Gronk Ben Ellefson was named to the third team. So some excellent postseason honors for these undefeated Bison. All right, let's hop real quick into the hoops preview. And I could almost just say the name Marcus Howard and kind of keep on moving with the rest of the day. Marquette is the epitome of a one-man show. They're very good, you know, overall as a team, because Marcus Howard is just at that level. But their second best player, in my opinion, is Theo John, who is almost a defense-only type of guy. Kobe McEwen is a good, strong guard, you know, helps out with the scoring a little bit at 10 points a game. Sakar Neem is the same thing. Big, strong guard, helps out with the scoring a little bit. He's shooting at 45% from three, but he's not taking a ton of them. Marcus Howard at 25.2 points a game in a 40-minute game, where he is, you know, really, really dominating the ball and dominating the games, that's going to be the complete and total key to this game, is getting him off the ball, running him off the 3-point line, and making somebody else beat you. And honestly, that is more difficult than it sounds, because multiple teams have struggled to do that, including a team that a team that North Dakota State already lost to this year in Kansas State. Marquette went down to Manhattan and won that game by 8. The only losses on Marquette's schedule so far are Maryland. They got drilled by Maryland, who was number 5 in the country at that time, and they also lost in Madison to Wisconsin. But they've got wins this season over Purdue, wins over USC, and a win over Kansas State. But again, kind of a one-man show. So get out on Marcus Howard. Maybe throw Chris Quayle at him a little bit. Throw Tyson Ward at him a little bit. Vinny Shahid and Cameron Hunter are going to get their chances at Marcus Howard as well. But stop Marcus Howard. Make the rest of the team beat you. And it's not appealing, because they're at five-serve forum. They certainly didn't play Marquette five-serve forum 14 years ago when they beat a top-10 Marquette team. But it's a program they've beaten before. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, Bison are 13.5-point dogs. So the expectations are low, but as Coach Richmond said, they're going to Milwaukee to win the game. That's the goal. They're going to Milwaukee to win the game, and it would be an absolutely enormous win for the program, because NDSU, I believe, sits at 8-4 right now in the non-conference. They're 100% absolutely going to beat Northland to get their 9th non-con win, but 10-4 with wins over Marquette and East Tennessee State is a hell of a resume to show the selection committee, should North Dakota State win those 3 games in March in Sioux Falls and move on to the NCAA tournament. Man, if you're talking about a 25-26 win Bison team with wins over East Tennessee State, who, just by the way, we tried to tell you how big of a win that was, just by the way, beat LSU on the road by double digits, East Tennessee State, who came into Fargo and got their asses kicked. A win over ETSU, win over Montana State, and a win over Marquette with a 25-26 win Bison team, which means 11-5 or 12-4 in the league. That's a 13 seed, guys. That's a 12. That's a big time chance to actually win a game in the tournament, which is not always the case, as we saw with the Duke pairing. Was it awesome to be up 21-20 or 20-19 over Duke and have the entire country cheering for North Dakota State? Sure it was. Were they actually ever going to win that game? Probably not. That seems incredibly unlikely. All right, we had a chance to talk. And there was a specific reason I talked to this kid. So BRTV, this podcast, I believe both mediums played this interview for you. We had a chance to talk with Big Zeej, Zach Johnson, the all-conference right tackle, now an all-American right guard. And we had a chance to talk to him during senior week and talk about his experiences that week, what he was feeling, kind of the oddity that is North Dakota State's senior week, where you're probably going to get a chance to play 2 or 3 more times at home, but you're still going to come out of that tunnel and shake coach's hand. So I wanted to have a chance to speak to him again about what it meant to be a Bison now that this really is the last time that he's going to run out of that huddle. So this is a fantastic interview with Zach. I'm not just saying that because I did it. I'm saying it because it truly is very, very good.
Senior offensive lineman Zach Johnson. Zach, how are we doing?
Good, are you?
Good. Did you and I have a chance to talk during senior week? Was that when our last conversation was? And that's kind of why I wanted to chat with you. This is the last time. And so, you and I talked about how kind of it's a little different. Like, you're going to run out of the huddle, you're going to shake coach's hand, but you're going to get more chances to play.
Right.
Now this is it. It's Tuesday. Has that sunk in at all?
Not until you just said.
I'm sorry.
No, it's totally fine. I don't know. We always have that mentality is 4th-and-1, but I mean, you never know when your last play is. So just trying to be the best you can when you can is a huge thing around here, and finishing. So
this is a smaller group of seniors, I think, but certainly one that has accomplished quite a bit. What will you remember most about this particular group of brothers?
Oh, man. I don't know, maybe just the time we came in and how we stuck together. I know that when Coach Kleiman left, it wasn't the easiest thing, but I think through that process, we even became closer and kind of leaned on each other a little bit more. I know for a fact that when we first came in here, there was a lot, I think it was like 32 of us. And I mean, we slimmed down quite a bit. So I don't know, just going through all the things in my head right now, it's just ridiculous. I mean, I came in with five offensive linemen, and I'm the last one. So.
And I talked to Jack, and he came in with two really big time defensive tackles from the cities, and the same thing. But you know, that's sometimes how this game works. You end up with big class, you end up with small classes. How much do you feel like this staff has leaned on you guys? And obviously you're going to lean on them. They're your coaches, but it's not a completely new crew, you know, but a lot of guys that, including your position coach, haven't been Bison before.
Right, exactly. We've butt heads a couple times just through common themes, talking, you know, just talking about that toolbox and what kind of techniques and stuff. But when it comes down to it, it's the same thing, and you guys come on the same page. And this whole staff really depends on us seniors. It's a player-driven program, that's for sure. They stick by their word for that. So I think it's kind of the coolest thing is they go for us, us seniors lead it, and that's how it is.
One way or another, you ended up with three All-Americans on the offensive line, yourself included, and then Nash was just named a sophomore All-American. You lost three really good players off of last year's offensive line. Why do you think this went so well?
Depth. I mean, depth and preparation. And I mean, just having Coach Riley around when he was, and the way he prepared and the way that everybody else prepared, knowing that man down, man up mentality, I mean, anybody's ready to go at any time. So, I mean, you got to make sure that the young guys are just as ready as the older guys. And they got to know that if they got to go in, there's flying bullets, and they're going. So.
And the thing I want to ask you about when you talk about depth is, it seems like every year there's always a sixth guy. And I don't know how much that's been going on this year. I know it was early, and kind of because Nash and Kubas were in sort of a battle. And I feel like I've seen more Nash than, you know, but Cordell had that opportunity last year to come in and rotate. How important is it to building depth to just not have you five guys play 70 snaps a game?
I think it's really important. I mean, it also during practice, it creates commotion, kind of. Are you going to be able to go? I mean, maybe during practice it gets a little fire under their butt, you know, knowing that their spots might not be there tomorrow. I mean, it gets it going, and that's for sure.
You were either an all-conference or an all-American right tackle. For sure all-conference. Moved inside the guard because Cordell is kind of that long, thin NFL looking guy at the tackle spot. We talked a little bit about this earlier, but how you're 14 games in, how do you feel like your time as a guard has been spent?
I think it's better than what I probably anticipated.
Okay.
For sure. I mean, understanding it more and more, it's a lot more thinking a little bit. You've got three components compared to two. I mean, you don't have to look at the safety and the coverage as much more. I mean, you got more of the interior linebacker stuff and the nose guard. You're looking more at the pressure of the sides rather than up the field. So there's a lot of things that kind of change in my brain of the perspective. But at the same time, I think I still see those things. So we've been really efficient.
Tanner played a lot of football.
Right.
And Carson, you mentioned some of the checks and some of the things that you're paying attention to as a line. A lot of that falls on the center. Some of it falls on Trey, and honestly, some of it obviously falls on you guys individually. But how well has Carson done in his first year of making sure you guys are on the same page?
I think Carson's done a fantastic job. I mean, him and Tanner are probably at the same level, just brain-wise. And I think Carson may be passing up Tanner just a little bit. But at the same time, I think we didn't miss a beat for sure.
Okay. You've got a freshman quarterback that won the Jerry Rice. He's my pick for Walter Payton. I don't think that's – I'm not convinced it's going to matter, but I was struck in the last game. You guys put up 9 points, which I can't imagine is acceptable, you know, to you. Every chance he had, he took responsibility for, I mean, everything. Yeah. And whether it was I missed a throw or I didn't get us into the right run call or whatever, how impressive is that kid? And how much do you put on your unit and maybe even you yourself on two offensive performances in a row that maybe have left a little something to be desired?
Right, yeah. I think obviously we all take it upon ourselves, and how Trey even talked about it, it was on him, but it clearly isn't. It's on all of us. I'll say it's a team thing. So there's 11 guys out there, and I mean, that's a lot of weight on your shoulders to take it all upon yourself. So I mean, when it comes down to it, everybody goes, oh, I could have done this better, but as long as you do your 111th, I think we would be successful.
What can you guys do better to all accomplish your 111th this weekend?
What can we do better?
Yeah, what do you feel like are things that led to that 9-point performance a week ago that you guys can clean up against Montana State?
Just communication, checks, balances. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it, but I mean, just I think everybody be on the same page, having that energy, coming out flying, I think is a huge key. So
what have you seen from the Bobcats on tape? Because you blew their doors off last year in the playoffs, but I have to feel like that has to be just considered absolute ancient history.
I wouldn't say ancient history, but yeah, we do notice some things. I they got a new DC, so everything's kind of changing around, but I mean, you never know how much that affects it. I think the guys up front have a good motor. I mean, I've seen a couple things that it just kind of characterizes what kind of players they are, but I think they still are high energy motor guys that they're going to play till the whistle ends. So,
last one, and then I'll let you go. What's the number one thing the offense needs to take care of to win this game?
Needs to?
What finish. Do you guys? Finish.
Finish.
Okay.
Finish that zone.
All right. We want to thank Zach for his time. We, of course, want to thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making Zach available to us. We have some awesome BRTV stuff up with the Mostart twins as well. Ryan Peralta and his crew were able to finally get the freshman twins to chat with us, and I thought they have a really interesting story that we were able to share yesterday on Bison Report. Those are two free videos, so guys, go ahead and check them out on Bison Report. You don't have to be a VIP member to watch those, though we would certainly appreciate you joining and hopping aboard the ship here. Trevor Gebhardt, how we doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm in the friendly confines of my wife's childhood bedroom in Dublin, Georgia, and I'm looking at all of her awards and accolades on her wall. There's a lot of valedictorian plaques, so we know who the smart one in the family is, and then she also has an Attitude and Spirit Award from 0708, so I guess you could say I married a good one.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, no disrespect to you, but I don't think there was any question about the brains in the family there. You know, I think everybody, I think everybody had that one figured out. I'm trying to think of a comparison here from your time, just because I think it's good to get your perspective on how these guys are thinking. If we can sort of compare it to something, you know, your folks went through, did you have a playoff rematch the next year with somebody that you had just absolutely murdered the year before?
Yes. So that would have been Coastal Carolina. We played them my junior year in, yep, the quarterfinals, both years actually.
Okay.
So it was the same, yep, same round. First year we boat raced them, expected a little bit closer game than what we had. And then the next year it was kind of a battle. Final score was 39-32 off the top of my head. And actually just met, ironically, last Saturday, met parents of a player on that team, a linebacker. Went to a housewarming party of a friend of mine in our neighborhood in Fort Mill, and a buddy of his played on that team. So kind of a small world there, but yeah, that second time around in the Fargo Dome is much easier, if there's a way to put it, because you have the experience, you know what to expect. You don't have the oohs and ahs, you don't have the bright lights, because it is a unique environment. The fans are on top of you. So yeah, I fully expect not a repeat of what occurred last year in the second round.
Yeah, and I think that's important because that's the exact scenario that Montana State is in. Came in, threw a bomb, did they throw a bomb and then NDSU held them to a field goal? But anyway, the first play of the game last year went for about 50 or 60 yards for Montana State. So they did throw the opening punch, but it ended up being an absolute massacre, 52-10. What do you take from that game if you're North Dakota State? Do you just pay attention to individual matchups that are still the same? Do you, you know, I think they have a different coordinator on at least one side of the ball. I mean, how much are they watching last year's game against these guys?
Probably not at all. I mean, I get it. I mean, it's natural. I mean, if you're a player, you know, if, like for myself, for example, if I was, you know, going up against a corner of the same guy that I did the previous year, you might go back and look at a few things for that specific one-on-one matchup. But overall, as a team, you're not watching it as a group simply because it's new teams. You do have somewhat different coaches. I know the head coach isn't different, but position groups change, coordinators change, your team has changed, and clearly NDSU has changed in a lot of ways. So different teams, different years, you don't put much stock into it at all. You know, the one thing I would look at, though, just based off how the offense has been rolling lately, is I would maybe go back and look at that and say, okay, we put up 52 points. What did we do well in that game against their defense? How did we line up? What did we – did they react to shifts in motions? Did they bite on certain things, fakes? You know, just take a look at different tendencies because you might pick up little tidbits that they're being coached on that you can exploit. So that would be what I would look at and just try to build confidence on last year's result. But as far as mimicking that, I wouldn't look at it from that verbatim at all.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's fair, and I think it's the same way that they even you know, treated playing Illinois State for the second time. And that was this season. You know, they wanted to basically pretend that that game didn't happen. And you know what? It's a good thing they did because that was rough. You know, the 9-3 win over Illinois State looked a hell of a lot different than the 37-3 win over Illinois State in Normal earlier in the game. And I think the one thing that you just cannot ever forget with Montana State, and big shout out obviously to our friend and former North Dakota State athletic director Gene Taylor, but the buyout, I believe the rallying cry last year was that you can't buy out the playoff game, which was true. And I think that 52-10 felt great for everybody. But boy, Montana State paid NDSU $100,000 to get out of a game, I believe in 2013. And the quote from Gene was really angry, really disappointed, stunned. I just don't understand it. It's really disappointing for our fan base. We upheld our end of the bargain. Then they tell us late February, it's not how we do business here. Knowing Gene, that is as angry as he's going to sound in the media. I would guess that the language and the feelings behind the scenes were quite different.
Well, I don't remember it a whole lot. I do remember the buyout, of course, because we were excited to play a bigger non-conference game. We don't get those too often because teams don't want to play us, even the FBS teams. And they run away from competition, and I quite frankly don't understand it. I think this team is a little bit different, but that's probably because they know they're a little bit better than what they've been over the past 5 to 7 years or so. But, man, I don't get that because at NDSU, if if we're putting in a contract to play a team, that's who we're playing. Man, it's like, hey, this is our word, this is our bond, here's the contract, let's roll. And, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's the first time I've seen it. You know, it probably happens a little more at the FBS level, but anytime you can play good competition, I don't know why you would run from it.
Yeah. anyway, what it led to, what it ended up leading to was Ferris State coming in the week after you guys beat Kansas State. And yeah, that would that it would have been fun to have Montana State in there. Certainly something that they have legitimately changed the way that they do those contracts and made more serious buyouts for games like that. And anyway, he's really upset. And I don't think Bison fans forget that. Even after kind of exercising that demon last year, I don't think Bison fans forget that. And obviously, we certainly just right now didn't help them forget that either. I got to be honest with you, Trevor, and maybe this is something that I just need to get over. But as an analyst, I have a hard time really taking a team seriously that lost to UND. And I know the transitive property of football is not legitimate, but you watch UND play North Dakota State and really and truly not belong on the same field. And then you watch UND play Nichols and kind of not really belong on the same field with them either. And then that team is able to play 60 minutes against Montana State and come up with a dub that really wasn't like a come from behind or a miracle or anything like that. Am I way off base here in just constantly looking at this Montana State team and wondering why I'm supposed to take them more seriously than I was supposed to take Illinois State?
Man, it's part of what we do and it's natural. And even players and coaches are looking at that going, okay, what did they do to exploit them? It's hard to know. I haven't dove into that game tape and looked at it by any means, but you just take a look at the flow of a season and how teams are playing. And that little section of their schedule was kind of the anomaly of the rest of their season. And it cost them a Big Sky championship, quite frankly, because they go to Cal Poly and they win in overtime. Not exactly a game you probably want to hang your hat on long-term, especially knowing where you're at now in the semifinals. And then they come back home for their homecoming and lose to Sac State by 13. Now, Sac State, of course, was seeded and Big Sky champion, so nothing terrible, but you win a game in overtime, you come home and lose by double digits, and then you go on the road to UND and lose another game. And that's when you're like, all right, we got to right the ship. Something's going on. At that point, they had lost three games, which is what their loss total is at now. Granted, one of them was Texas Tech to start the year. And they have found their stride because you look at their next games. They win 42-7 against Southern Utah. They go on the road to Northern Colorado, get a 31-point dub there. They go to UC Davis, who seems to just be giving teams fits, but they beat them by 10. And then they have the Brawl of the Wild to finish the season against Montana, and they just bull raced them. And that gave them some serious momentum into the playoffs. They ended the regular season on a good note and, of course, got the bye. So they play Albany and Austin Peay, and both of those come out to be double-digit wins. And I think since that UND game, they haven't lost. So whatever happened in that game, I think, was the anomaly. And they said, hey, if we want to keep playing football and play to the level we know that this team is capable of, we have to right the ship now. And they have certainly done that. But for us, looking at it going, okay, is this team going to knock off NDSU? Okay, any team at this point can knock off anybody. I think people know that. We've seen crazier happen. But to take it serious and go, all right, well, what are they doing to lose to a team like UND? Are they for real, for real? And the team that beat, the two teams that have beaten NDSU in the playoffs since 2010, of course, Eastern Washington and James Madison, they had that. You could see it definitively through their schedule, through their players. You could look at that team and go, these guys will probably have a really good shot at winning the game. And it wasn't a surprise. When James Madison came into the Dome in 2016, they were a legitimate better football team that day. They were playing like it. They acted like it. And Montana State, I think they have the confidence. Just because of you look at 9-3 and go, oh, wow, they're ripe for the picking. Well, Bobcats also lost to UND. So, I mean, it's a two-way street, but to look at that and go, okay, can they legitimately do that by themselves? It's hard to say.
Yeah, and you know, you're always trying to find an angle to make things interesting, to make things competitive. You know, I get a lot of, you know, the – Oh, I called that James Madison loss. Yeah, good for you. Nobody cares. You know, you probably picked JMU the next year in the championship and you got it wrong. There are a lot of people trading off supposedly calling that 2016 loss by North Dakota State. Anyway, I want to get into the actual nuts and bolts as opposed to the more conceptual stuff. And I don't think you can start any Montana State discussion without Troy Anderson. He's like, so hard to explain. It's like if James Hendricks got 10 to 12 carries a game or 6 to 8 carries a game and maybe threw it once in a while. Just his numbers are insane. Rushing attempts, couple of passing attempts, as an interception, 6.5 sacks, 39 tackles, 5 pass break. I mean, what does this guy not do? You didn't play against anybody like this when you were there, did you?
Not that I can recall, no. I mean, the closest thing we had on our team was Dudzik, and he played offense for like 2 or 3 snaps, and he had a missed assignment, so that kind of put that to bed our senior year. the closest thing I can think of to Troy Anderson is Taysom Hill with the Saints, who, of course, their backup quarterback.
Sure.
Played his college ball at BYU. I'm just going to read off some of his stats, and this is wild. So, I mean, he's got a 0-1 touchdown interception ratio. Not too surprised there because you got Drew Brees taking snaps in front of you. Not really going to chunk the ball a lot when you're his backup. But he's got 99 passing yards in his career. He's got 337 rushing yards. He has 172 receiving yards. He has 360 return yards. And he has 11 tackles and 8 touchdowns. And he's a backup quarterback in the NFL. That to me is basically Troy Anderson in FCS.
Sure. No, I like that comp. I think that makes a lot of sense. Troy, I think's a little bit bigger. Like, I don't think you'd want Taysom playing linebacker, but he certainly runs down on teams and covers guys and is a useful guy. You know, obviously I run Packer Report and have the Packer Report podcast. There are a ton of Packers fans that are really angry that they ended up letting Taysom Hill go in favor of Brett Hundley. And I'm not sure, maybe the LaFleur staff would have used him the way that Peyton is, but I guarantee you Mike McCarthy wasn't going to have Taysom Hill playing tight end. He just would have had him as a backup quarterback, but that's a different podcast for a different day, certainly. So last year, Troy Anderson's playing quarterback. And as I mentioned, hit NDSU over the top with a bomb to kind of get things kicked off. And that was a big play in the game. I mean, Montana State had to throw a punch early or they just weren't going to be taken seriously. And granted, ultimately they ended up not needing to be taken seriously, but he throws a 71 yard pass to start the game. As we mentioned, all the things he's doing right now, not quarterback. He's not the quarterback. That is Tucker Rovig. And just wondering if you think that this guy is enough of a dude, because the dude factor is, and I think we might get some t-shirts done in the off season. People are liking the dude factor, but the dude factor, I don't know who has it on this Montana State team. It was really clear week one that Chase Forcade was the dude. Really clear week two, James Robinson was the dude. I'm not sure I know who the dude is here. Does Tucker Rovig have what it takes, this quarterback that obviously isn't Troy Anderson? Or maybe Troy Anderson's the dude. I don't know.
Yeah, if I had to pick a dude on this team, it'd be probably one of two guys. It wouldn't be Tucker Rovig. It'd be Troy Anderson, just because he's so athletic. He can do a multitude of things. Clearly a smart football player if he can play that many positions. Like we said, it's kind of like Jimmy football, but the Montana State version. And James is a great, great football player, and he's going to put the teams in a lot of positions. Is he going to win the game by himself? Probably not, but can he beat you in certain ways and put a dagger in your heart? Absolutely. So that's how I would say Troy Anderson. And then the running back, I can never pronounce his name right, Afonzi. I think he's a pretty good player if you can let him loose. But as far as Tucker Rohrvig being the dude factor in this game, I don't see it. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's going to lose the game for him. But he's not going to throw for, 300 yards like Taron Christian could, and then maybe rush for another 50. He doesn't run the ball a lot. Decent passer. He's only got 4 interceptions, so he's just going to take care of the football. So he's the type of guy that he's going to come in, he's going to do his job, he's going to do it well, but he himself is not going to be responsible for 21 points in this football game, which would be what we would call our dude factor.
Right. And we mentioned with Ifeanyi, if I screwed up the pronunciation, I don't think the website, at least when I looked, had a pronunciation guide. So really, Montana State Sports Information, that's on you. It might be on me for not looking hard enough, but I'm going to say it's on you anyway. He was busy last week. That is absolutely no question about that. 196 net. He did lose 2 yards, but 196 yards rushing, and he threw a touchdown against Austin Peay, ran one in as well. This guy might have the dude factor if anybody does on that roster. So second consecutive week then that North Dakota State really needs to focus in on a tailback, because he was very, very good, and it wasn't like it was on 40 carries. It was on 26. A guy average 7.5, and I'm going to tell you, Austin Peay's defense, their talent, strength, size, not even in the same stratosphere as North Dakota State. I watched the game. It's not even close, but 7.5 a carry is 7.5.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so you take a look at his box scores throughout the year, and he really didn't do a lot in the first half, but again, he's a young dude. He's only a sophomore. Ever since he scored his first touchdown against UC Davis, which I talked about that earlier. So this is like mid-November at this point. He's been kind of on a roll, and he's gotten a lot more carries, so they're trusting him with a lot more, and he's clearly playing with a lot of confidence. Austin Peay, not the greatest defense in the world in comparison to Cole Green when you're looking at from those eyes. But again, he rushed for 196 yards in a playoff game at the end of the day. That's pretty good. You take a look at his whole stats for the year, he's not going to stand out and be like, oh, he's a 1,500-yard rusher, that sort of thing. That's not the case. He's a young guy who's playing really good football right now, and they're trusting him with a lot of responsibilities. The fact that you have to honor that, along with a quarterback who's not going to lose the game for you, says, okay, we can't load 9 guys in the box to stop Isaiah Ifeanyi. I don't know. So they're going to have to play a little bit more zone coverage to make sure that Tucker Rohrvig doesn't beat you himself. Ifeanyi could get loose within that if you lose sight of him. So, and that has been the recipe for NDSU losses over the last decade, is running backs that find ways to get yards in big situations. This is the type of kid that can do that, because he's shown it ever since UC Davis.
Yeah, Khalid Abdullah, that's a guy that Bison fans will never forget, the way he ran all over NDSU. Granted, that 2016 team was short one Nate Tangway and short one Nick DeLuca. I think those guys have a little bit to do with North Dakota State's run defense. But at the same time, the club is one that will say next man up, next man up, next man up. And the next man up just didn't get it done against Khalid Abdullah and James Madison in 2016. They've got a couple of good receivers. Kevin Cassis, he's the one who grabbed the 71-yard touchdown to begin the game last year. And then Travis Johnson has 539 yards as well. These guys are a little bit more of a pass-heavy offense with 358 attempts than certainly North Dakota State. I think Trey is still around 260 as far as many times as he's put it up. But they're not, a crazy wing it all over the field offense like some big sky schools are, because against those 358 pass attempts, there are 642 rush attempts by the Bobcats. So they are going to try and win this game on the ground. What is going on with North Dakota State's offense? And I hope you guys noted in Zach Johnson's interview a couple of times where he kind of caught himself, where he wanted to talk about how excited these guys have a game plan. I mean, they have a game plan every week, but you could really notice in what Zach was talking about that they have caught onto a few things that Montana State's doing on defense, and they're really excited about what they're potentially going to do offensively. As he mentioned, 9 points last week, it's just not up to snuff. It's not okay. It's not acceptable to the Bison offense. And I just want your take on what might occur offensively this week in, I would say, a week that not only are people doubting the offense, but they're doubting them so much that they're kind of worried about looking ahead the next game. Is this offense good enough to beat what would likely be James Madison?
That game at this point could be a coin flip. So, I mean, if you're looking ahead to a Frisco game, I mean, you've got to right the ship this week. You've got to get some confidence, and you got to get momentum rolling into playing, excuse me, one of the best defenses in FCS football alongside your own. So that'll be a blue blood, big dog matchup, which would be great for the subdivision. So I'm rooting for it personally. But as far as Montana State goes, I mean, they play in the Big Sky. You could almost say it's the Big 12 of FCS. So they don't play as well as defense as they do in the Missouri Valley.
No. 20.6 points per game for these Bobcats.
Right. So, I mean, when you take a look at matchups, you're going, okay, is Code Green going to give up 20 points? Very unlikely. Is the offense going to score 20 points? Well, based off how they've played the last couple weeks, you don't really know, but you're going, can they score 3 touchdowns? Absolutely. So that's where I'm going, okay, a victory is likely. The cream always rises to the top. And I just think you just get more guys involved. Honestly, last week was everyone, like we said in our game recap pod, you had play calling guy, and it's like, guys, that's not the case. You needed to keep 25 off the field, and that's how you were going to win the football game. And yes, you had a game plan. Brock's back, a very veteran coach, probably knew that was going to happen and had a way to combat that. I'm sure he spent many hours in his office that week to make sure that he gave his team the best, put his team in the best position possible to win, and they did that, and that's a credit to them. So I think it's more of, honestly, when I've taken a step back and looking at it, I think Illinois State needs a little bit more credit than bashing what the offense has done, because this offense just all of a sudden overnight does not lose their ability to play football. Christian Watson had over 100 yards receiving. So clearly you could tell something was made from Illinois State's game plan to just stop the run. And they did that. So kudos to them. Montana State, they're not going to be as good at stopping the run. They might have some gaps and holes in that second level to get the tight ends more involved. And that opens up the run game a little bit more. So I don't know what the matchup speed-wise look like on the edges, but you got a dude factor in Christian Watson. I don't know what the health status of Phoenix Sproles is, but if he's able to play too, you go back to your guys and just – do what you know how to do. I mean, you don't chalk one bad offensive week in the box score up to saying, well, we're defeated. That's not the way they roll in that locker room. That's not the way we roll in that culture. And you know what? Get more guys involved. Get guys excited. Find a few things that you got to do to be better. And maybe last week was a blessing in disguise. So I think if you put up 24, 27 points, you're going to come out with a win. So just make that your goal. And I think you'll put yourself in a very good position to be in Frisco.
For sure. One guy that they need to, and I can't remember if it's Montana State or Montana, but maybe it's, I don't know. Anyway, number 37, Bryce Sterk. And the reason I'm trying to figure that out is one of those teams, I believe it's even 37, they give to their top defensive guy every year. But Bryce Sterk, 20 tackles for loss, 15 sacks, getting a little bit of NFL buzz. Just another stud after McKnight last week, and now obviously the kid Leish from Nichols was an interior rusher, but another big time pass rush guy. Though I want to put a little bit of a caveat on his numbers because of the league that they play in. Those 15 sacks are on 513 passing attempts by the opponent. So He saw a lot of rush opportunities. And I'm not saying he's a bad player, because I think he's pretty good, but he's got a long day ahead of him against two All-American tackles. Is this guy worrying you at all?
No, he's not. I mean, he's a really good player. He's going to get looks. Whether he finds himself on a roster or not, I don't really know. Personally, I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, he is a transfer from Washington, so the ability level from what scouts might have thought when he was a teenager is there. And of course, being 6'5", 260, and as athletic as he is, you're going to get looks naturally. And the numbers certainly don't hurt, but he can help himself out from an NFL perspective by having a really good game on Saturday. But as far as being a huge disruptor to the point where the offense can't get rolling, like we've seen with what was the guy from UNI? Xavier Williams, is that his name?
Yeah, Xavier Williams. Yep.
Back in the day. Yeah. I mean, he was that type of guy that would scare you. But he was more interior. So, but Bryce Dirk, he does not scare me to that level. Really, really good player. I definitely want to see him do well. I'm always root for the FCS guys, but as far as Saturday goes and looking at it from that perspective, you have two NFL guys who I'm confident will find themselves on a roster that he has to be matched up against. That's tough. So he can do himself a huge favor by having a great game, by going up against a run-heavy offense. But, yeah, I don't know as far as being a legitimate disruptor.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I think Lance took a sack last week. But ultimately, pass rushers just have not had success against North Dakota State this year. They're too good at the tackle spot to really let stuff around the edge. Lance is too smart with the football and, frankly, really slippery, and a guy that can get downhill and cause problems. You saw him pick up a couple of big third downs with his feet. I'm not worried about him, though he is a good player. He just has a tough matchup this week. And it's not an offense that's going to let you rush the passer a ton. The last question I have, or the last thing we kind of want to discuss, is the game flow. What the ideal game looks like for North Dakota State. And just sort of diving into the numbers, I mean, this is what I would like to see happen if I'm a Bison fan. Number one, I want to pay attention. I want to put, if I can, I want to have Josh Hayes on Cassis as much as I can. He's the number one guy, and try and take him out of the game using sort of just Hayes. If you do that, then you can have a similar James Robinson type approach. Now, are they going to go double eagle? Are they going to have a 5-man defensive front against Montana State? No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think you would put a little bit more faith in Rovig than you did in Jefferson a week ago. I think they're going to play a lot of their base looks. They might roll a safety down. But if you're able to stop the run and you don't make Cassis beat you, I'm just not convinced that the second receiver, the tight ends, and Rovig are going to be enough to really, you know, dominate on the other side of the ball. It's the same thing we asked for and never got against Illinois State, which is get out in front and outpace them and make Montana State come from behind throwing the football, because they're not comfortable doing that. We mentioned, yeah, they threw it 350 times. They also ran it 620 or some, you know, ridiculous number. They're not going to be able to run the ball down 17. They're not going to be able to run the ball down 21. If you really believe in this North Dakota State offense, and I still do, I really, truly still do, and you believe that they're a top 5 offense in FCS football, this is a Bobcat defense giving up 20.6 points a game to a Big Sky schedule with really nobody all that good on the non-con. They did go play Texas Tech. Texas Tech is bad. Texas Tech is not a good, specifically, honest, and this sounds nuts because of the way that you think of Texas Tech. Texas Tech is not a good offensive football team this year, flat out. Go watch them play Climate in Kansas State. They gave up 45 to them, gave up 20.6 over the course of the season to, a schedule that wasn't that impressive. North Dakota State should absolutely be able to get into the 40s this game, and it's when you put those points on the board that's going to be the key to whether Montana State stays in this game or not, because if they're down 14 in the first quarter, if they're down 17 in the second quarter, this is not a team that's going to be able to stick around.
As far as game flow goes, I think the biggest thing that needs to happen, and I'm not giving any groundbreaking news here, but get an early score. You need some early momentum. They haven't had that in this playoff run at all. So get an early score, get up, and put the panic button on Montana State, because they're coming in with, it seems like confidence, but that's only because they're looking at a 93 box score. They look at, and they played Austin Peay and beat them by 20 or whatever. But I think getting an early score will put that doubt start creeping in, even if it's just one touchdown. But then you stack on another field goal or maybe even another touchdown, and you put this game in a double-digit reach. They're not coming back from that. And so I think if you do that early, that'll be the huge reason that NDSU goes to Frisco. Now, if you give them confidence early and they score early, you've got to get a turnover. So that's what I'm looking at. It's like, hey, if they get up 7-0, wouldn't be the first time, whatever. You're going to have to get turnovers. From an offensive perspective, I want to see maybe some zone read. I want to see a couple jet sweeps, and I want to see the tight ends get involved early, because I think when you're doing that, you're putting them on their heels, starting to guess of what you're going to do offensively, and then you can start to ram it down their throat with the ball control and the time of possession, because I think it's going to be necessary to get about 35 to 37 minutes time of possession. And if you do that, you put up a score early, they'll be just fine.
Yeah, I'd like to see maybe a surprise wrinkle too. Maybe one of the young guns. I don't know if Bussy's finger or hand is healed, but maybe some Bussy or some Kobe or maybe even Braylon Henderson, just a guy that is not necessarily on the scouting report for Montana State. And you nailed it. Get a score early. Earlier on in the season, Tyler LaRoll's scripts were so good. That first 15 plays on the sheet, they're generally predetermined, and he needs a good script this week. He needs a good script. They need to get going, get up 7-0, and set the tone for the game. You know, obviously the NDSU recipe for starting the game: win the toss, defer, 3-and-out, score, and the other team's already fighting uphill, knowing that the Bison are getting the ball coming out of the half and they're already down a touchdown. So that's what NDSU needs to do to separate this game and head down to Texas. All right, Trev, we've prattled on long enough. Hit me with your game prediction.
So I've been stewing on this all week, because I've given myself about 15 score predictions in my head, and I was originally going to go with 30-14. But the more I thought about it, the more I looked at it, I'm going, okay, I don't think the offense is going to be held to that many points, especially when they're giving up an average of 26. I think they right the ship this week. They understand what's at stake, because last week was a little bit of a scare. And again, credit to Illinois State. So I think they come out firing all cylinders. So I'm going to go 42-17.
Japers. You and I have a good way of making this show really boring. I've got 45-17. That's where I'm at.
That wasn't discussed beforehand either. The people need to know that. Not at all.
It wasn't. As I mentioned, I kind of was talking about game flow. There's no reason, if you really believe in this Bison offense, that they can't get into the 40s against this Montana State defense. And when I say 17, I mean, you talk about not junk time touchdowns. You talk about real actual defense. There are not a lot of teams that got to 14. There aren't a lot of teams that got to 10 while the game was still in doubt. Yes, there's some second string teams that, like Delaware, I think scored late. I know Northern Iowa scored late. I know Youngstown State scored late, as did Western Illinois, I think, scored twice late before, after things were already decided. But I mean, Montana State's a threat. Yeah, I think they get to that 14 or 17 point mark, but there's just no reason the Bison aren't in the 40s in this game. And obviously they'll head then on to Frisco. Trev, really appreciate your time this morning so that we could get this baby out to the people, hopefully dropping this, folks, around lunchtime on Friday, so you can listen to this either at, on your way home from work or maybe in the morning. I know a lot of you, or a few of you at least, have this on the docket for when you're sitting in the line to get into the tailgating lot, and we certainly appreciate that. We love the shots of your vehicles with our podcast playing while you're in line for tailgating. That's just awesome. Makes us really appreciate all our fans. Guys, the number one way to support Trevor and I and the Bison Report is to become a VIP member. I believe right now we're doing 30% off of an annual subscription, or $1 for the first month. If we're not, it's the full price deal, but that means immediate access to the commercial-free version of CBS All Access, as well as the entire 24/7 network. That includes Viking Update, that includes my site, Packer Report, that includes, you know, the Gophers site, the Badgers site, Alabama site, whoever you want to check out. It's the entire network. We really appreciate that. You have no idea how much that means to us, and we will almost instantly reinvest it right back into the product. We are trying to make a better Bison Report every single day. All right, guys, we really appreciate you one more time, and go Bison.